Here's an American hero sitting right in front of us. And then you know, when these things happen, I never know exactly what to say because I'm.
Oh, you get all flustered.
I'm an American anti-hero. You know, that's like that. That's how that goes. Right now, all right, here we go. This. Let me just explain who Colonel Terry Virts is. Mm-hmm. He is a NASA astronaut who spent over 200 days in space. If you're on the social media and you see the pictures coming from the International Space Station, they're probably Terry took them, I think is a way of saying that, because you're a very prolific photographer up there. It seemed like you wanted to catalog everything that was going on, right? You came actually back with Commander Kelly, right? Weren't you on that mission?
I was the station commander when he showed up, so I got him started off on his mission.
Right, and he was there for almost a year, right?
Scott and Misha were there for 340 days, yeah.
Yeah, and that was, to me, one of the most interesting human experiments of all times. You know, when you think about it, the two twin brothers, yeah. You know, one on the ground and one in space, trying to live similar lives, right? Diet you know, kind of living. One in gravity and one without gravity, to see what the effects of the human body would be.
Yeah, we've been doing kind of studies on humans for 15 years now, more than that, since 2000, the space station's been going. And before that, the Russians had the Mir space station, where they actually had, I think, four guys stay longer than a year. So there's been, you know, people have been living and working in space for long periods of time for quite a while now.
Yeah.
The pictures were just so phenomenal, the ones that you guys brought back. We said this when we talked to Kelly also, and it was amazing just to see the view you were able to appreciate from space. Can you talk about some of the weather phenomenon that you witnessed? Because there were some pictures that just captured things we've never seen before.
Right. I'm a photographer. I'm the dad that, you know, the kids are like, Dad, quit taking pictures. You know, I
always had a camera. You're that guy.
Yeah, I'm that guy. So but even before I went into space, that was just kind of my natural thing. But some of the weather that I saw, well, first of all, MISAC is like the biggest hurricane I've ever seen. There's a picture of that. It's a typhoon that was in the Philippines. Mm. And, God, that thing was just humongous. The lightning storms in Africa and also the Amazon and Indonesia, but particularly Africa. You'd fly over there at nighttime, especially if there's no moon. And it was just the most amazing show you have ever seen, with like hundreds of flashes.
You're seeing lightning from space. And how many miles above are you?
We're about 250 miles up on the space station.
As you're looking 250 miles down,
right.
It is even when you fly commercial aviation, right? Mm-hmm. At night, sometimes you'll see a storm ahead of you and you see the lightning and stuff.
Yeah.
But when you're seeing it from 250 miles above, what's the difference there?
Well, the difference is you can see lots of, when you're flying in an airplane, I took a video, actually it's on YouTube, of a night lightning storm, and it was incredible, but it was like a storm with lots of lightning going off. When you're in space, you look over the continent full of storms, and there's, you know, hundreds of storms just popping at the same time. There's a picture actually I took of a hurricane with when a lightning flashed at the second I took the picture, and you can see the eye of the hurricane lit up at nighttime with with the lightning. It's really cool.
Wow. And now at least I've always wondered this. And please don't be offended by this question, but how boring is it up there? I mean, it's like, I know you're, this seems like a really good thing that you're doing here, part of your job and also something to distract your mind, but it's got to be kind of mind-numbing.
Seeing the same people every day?
Well, we kind of laughed about, you know, like 6 months in space or 200 days or a year. So if you wrote a novel about it, it would kind of be like paint drying. But however, I got to be honest. So my shuttle flight was 2 weeks, and that was like they used to say shuttle flights were sprints, and the long duration station flights were marathons. But mine was like a sprint that lasted 200 days. I mean, I was super busy. We filmed a IMAX movie called Beautiful Planet.
Nice.
Maybe here in the Chicago IMAX theater. It's playing around the world, but I did that in my spare time. Like that at nighttime when we were done our 12-hour workday, then I would get my camera out and then I would start taking these pictures from view from above or doing
videos.
And
you had different shifts in that 12 hours?
We, on the station, it's normally just one shift.
One shift. And then everybody then sleeps for those 12 hours and wakes up and starts working again?
Yeah.
Or whatever you can.
It's pretty much the same sleep schedule for the whole crew. Russian, American, European, everybody up there is pretty much on the same time.
Interesting, with all of the tenseness around the American-Russian relationship, the space program, and you do hear some people who are trying to kind of lessen the tension mention this. The space program still is a fully cooperative thing.
So that's one of the big stories in my book. We had a, well, while I was training and launching, the Ukraine Civil War happened, Crimea happened, sanctions happened, the shoot down of the Dutch airliner, all these really bad things were going on. Mm-hmm. And in the middle of that, I was training with Russians, enjoying it a lot, made some great friends there. And we had an incident where there was an emergency. There was an ammonia leak, which was the first time that's ever happened.
On board the ISS?
On board the ISS. The alarm went off. So you have to go down the Russian segment and close the hatch. And we really thought the American half of the space station was dead. In the long run, it turned out to be a false alarm. But we spent a day sequestered on the Russian segment. Their prime minister called us up, a guy named Dmitry Rogozin. He was the guy that was tweeting about how Americans could take a trampoline because we did sanctions. And mm-hmm. apparently Twitter is a thing now for world leaders.
Yeah, who knows, anyway. Right?
So in the middle of all these things, he said, hey, Americans, you can stay as long as you want. We're going to work together. It was a great example of cooperation. And the relationships I had with the cosmonauts on board was great. I mean, these guys are my friends. Anton, who I flew with, is in Houston now. I'm going to see him when I go back this weekend. So in the middle of all this political stuff, the reality is, on a person-to-person level, they're just people, and sure. we were like trying to stay alive in
and
space.
People are all doing the, you're all on the same mission, like, essentially, there.
Yeah, like, we just didn't want to die in outer space, so no. We were working together, and it was a great example.
What is your thought about travel to Mars, human travel to Mars? Because yeah. one of the things, obviously, the experiments that some of the stuff you were doing, and obviously Commander Kelly was doing, is about duration mission.
Yeah.
Do you see this as a likely probability within the next generation?
Well, the space station's shown we can live and work in space. I was there 200 days, got back. I lost 0% of my bone density, did 20 pull-ups. I came back in good shape. As long as you do your exercise, guys come back in good shape. I just wrote an article, actually several articles for NBC and a science website called Ars Technica about how we should be going to Mars and how to get to Mars. So I've kind of put some thoughts out there about that. The main point that I make, and I've had a chance to talk to lots and lots of congressmen and senators, the biggest impediment is the political science and not the rocket science. We have to come up with a plan, and then we have to figure out a way to stick to it and not change it every 4 years.
We have to come up with a story to tell the American people to pay for it, right? No bucks, no Buck Rogers.
No
that
bucks,
line
no Buck Rogers, yeah.
From the right stuff.
Yeah.
And it just, to me, it's like if you're not able to tell the story and come up with a plan and a mission, it was, obviously Kennedy, it was to get to the moon. Everybody understood that.
Right.
It's that we can see it. It's
right.
The moon. It's right there.
Right.
And, whoever controls that politically, you could sell that to the Senate. Senators,
right.
you can control the world, and then just to the explorer in every human, right, that wants to
yeah.
venture out, they could see that Mars is a tougher sell, isn't it?
Well, Mars in the long run, Mars is a much more interesting place than the moon. There's water there. You can see, if you have a telescope, you can look up and you see the polar ice cap. You can see water from your backyard. There's a little bit of an atmosphere there. There's a 24 and a half hour day there. It's farther from the sun, so the radiation's not quite as bad. There used to be oceans there. So there's a lot of things that are interesting about Mars, and humans could potentially live there.
Right. The moon, potatoes. They can grow the potatoes there.
You got your potatoes.
But you have to do it in a special
right.
soil.
Exactly.
That's what we learned from
Mark
the Martian.
Watney. Hey, Andy Weir is actually the only blurb I have on my book is from him. The guy that wrote The Martian.
That's great.
How many times have you seen that movie?
I've seen it a couple. We actually watch it in space.
Oh, wow.
Gravity. Watch Gravity in space.
See, now, wait a second.
Hold on just one second.
Life
a little nice.
Well,
nicer?
I don't think so.
No?
Watching Gravity? You know what happens in Gravity?
They do, but yeah. They know what they're doing. It's
the
a
astronauts
movie.
Always, that's the problem with space movies. The astronauts always die.
Yeah.
That's kind of true.
Marooned? Did you ever see that movie? Maybe when you were a kid?
Long time ago. I remember that. Yeah.
I saw it as a little kid, and I cried for weeks afterwards.
Too scary.
Because the astronauts always eat it in almost every movie.
Yeah.
There's a picture there at the end of you making your first phone call after your journey.
Yeah.
Who was that to?
To family back at, wife and kids back in Houston on the satellite phone.
And your face is kind of indented with the helmet?
I have, believe it or not, the largest head ever of an astronaut. Besides, I took the most pictures ever, and I've got the biggest head ever of an astronaut.
So
the Russians, they measure you for the suit and this couch. Ever since Yuri Gagarin, they've got the scale that Yuri Gagarin stepped on. They've been measuring everybody's head. and they told me that mine was the biggest. So there's a special procedure to get a helmet on my big noggin because, like, the space, you know, the spacewalking helmet just doesn't fit. So anytime on the space shuttle, on the Russian Soyuz, you know, getting in and out of that thing was like, it smashed my chin, and I'd always have a bruise right there.
Oh, God. So, Terry, what did now you did do extravehicular?
I did spacewalking. Did three times.
And let's just talk about that for a second. What must that be like for a human being when you realize what you're doing?
So I'd been a fighter pilot and test pilot and flew the shuttle and did all these things. And there's nothing like spacewalking. I mean, you're out in outer space. And you're in a spacesuit that's basically a spaceship. And there's this little thin, millimeter thick visor on the spacesuit. And, like, on the other side of that is instant death. So I was never scared, but I felt like I was on the clock, like I've never been on the clock before.
Wow.
The whole chapter 7 in the book, View from Above, is about that spacewalking experience. And I took over 300,000 pictures. I'm always taking pictures.
Yeah.
They told me I took the most ever. But on the spacewalks, I took about 10 per spacewalk. I just didn't have time.
Yeah.
In other words, I would have loved to have taken thousands. I just felt like... there's so much work to do, and you got to get it done. And they all went great.
Did you sleep the night before these, the first time you did it?
The
space debris thing is the one that they always, like in all the movies, it's like, you know, some nut from a satellite that fell off.
Tiny little thing.
Right. And then it goes right through that little millimeter.
It's just a little thing. It's just going, 10 kilometers a second. Actually, when I was there, we had to maneuver the station for some debris that our Chinese friends created a decade ago. They blew up a satellite with a military anti-satellite weapon, and they did it at the same altitude that the space station's at. So usually several times a year, we have to maneuver to avoid.
And how much warning do you get on that?
The Air Force tracks probably 50 or 60,000 little pieces of debris in space.
And how big are the pieces?
Well, from
a
bolt to a bus. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in space. There is a lot of stuff smaller than that, thankfully. And it does hit the station occasionally, but it just makes little dents. It's so small.
You can hear it or no?
I never heard it, but I saw it when I was walking, when I was doing spacewalk. You'd see little divots and stuff.
That's disconcerting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
One day on my space shuttle flight, we'd cover up the window, go to bed, and at nighttime we'd take the cover off, and we took the cover off, and there was a big crater, like a moon crater, on the window. It's right by the space shuttle had a great bathroom because it has a window
you can watch
the world going by. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
So we took the cover off and there was a giant crater there. So that was like,
how many bathrooms do you get are people knocking at the door?
The shuttle had one in the station. There's one on the U.S. segment and there's one on the Russian segment. So if it's like, come on, man, mm-hmm. you could go down to the other segment and go. But usually it was there's only six people total for two bathrooms.
Right,
so.
and there's a process to it too, right?
I mean, it's not like you're
getting a magazine out and you're able to work some time there.
Especially when I was a rookie on the shuttle flight, God, that was the most nerve-wracking thing. You don't want to mess up the bathroom. So there's a NASA.
There's girls on that too, right? Isn't that part of the issue?
There's a procedure. Like you got step one, step two. So you don't want to rush.
Is there a seat that has to be put down, or I guess
the shuttle had a handle you pulled, and then this guillotine opened up, and then airflow kept everything going in the right direction.
All right,
sort of like an American Airlines flight, kind of. All right, the book is called View from Above: An Astronaut Photographs the World.
Photos.
This is you must have this. National Geographic is putting it out, this is a very special, a great honor to have you. This is great. Terry Virts, who's here. It says Commander Terry Virts because you're a space shuttle commander.
It's kind of weird because I was the station commander, but I was the Air Force colonel. And the commander's a Navy rank, but I'm an Air Force guy, so it's kind of weird. But it's my first time in Chicago. Super excited to talk about the book.
Welcome.
Looks like a great city. My hotel room's a little moldy.
Hey, it turns out it was the ambient air that was moldy. It was not the hotel.
The mayor wanted us to make sure you knew that.
Headache. Yeah,
he still could win a game, though. That's the problem. That's the problem I have with that story. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate it. And welcome back to Earth. You don't get to say that to all the guests.
No.
at least the guys are sometimes rappers. You get to say that too, because they're stoned. But this really is it's a very, very special thing. And thank you for your service.
Thanks for having me.
To not only United States of America, but to humanity.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thanks for sharing your story,
too.
Here is Violetta Podomenic with the WGN Traffic Trouble Spots.